From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. You might think Sam Brownback would be just what the Republican Party is looking for in a presidential candidate. Farmer's son, Kansas senator, down-to-earth appeal with solidly conservative, evangelically friendly views on abortion, federal spending, strong borders, and stem cells. At Tuesday's Republican debate in Michigan, Brownback said Republicans need to pick a solid conservative as their nominee.
I believe that person that's going to lead the party will be somebody that is pro-growth and pro-life. I think these are two pivotal, key foundation issues that this party needs to stand for.
But right now, many see pro-choice, gay-friendly Rudy Giuliani as the GOP frontrunner, and the religious right is still loudly looking for its candidate. So what about Sam? This hour, On Point, Republican presidential candidate, Senator Sam Brownback, on his vision, his run for the White House, and the future of the GOP. You can join the conversation, where's the prairie fire for Brownback? And if it's not there, does it mean the religious right is moving on, changing course, falling out with the GOP? We're at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Kansas City is Republican presidential candidate Sam Brownback. He was elected to Congress with the Republican Revolution wave in 1994. In 1996, he took retiring Senator Bob Dole's seat for Kansas. He serves on the Judiciary, Appropriations, and Joint Economics Committees with Democrat Joe Biden. Interestingly, he supports a three-state solution, kind of breakup, for Iraq. He voted for the traditional marriage amendment to the U.S. Constitution against the immigration reform bill. He has called Darfur a genocide and urges international intervention. He argues for a flat tax and for prison reform. A self-described seeker, Brownback talks openly about his religious beliefs and adult conversion to Catholicism in his memoir, From Power to Purpose. Sam Brownback, welcome back to On Point.
Thank you, Tom. It's a pleasure to join you.
Great to have you with us, Sam. There's a lot we want to learn in this hour, but I wish you'd just start with a snapshot of your campaign. I'm reading here, AP story out of Washington yesterday says that you're saying if you don't finish in at least the top four places in the Iowa caucuses, you are definitely out of the race. Where does your campaign stand, Sam Brownback?
Well, right now we're in Kansas City. I'm headed to Muscatine, Iowa, and Dubuque. I think we've got a good chance of making that top four finish in Iowa. And what I've got to do is I've got to perform on the ground. I've got to perform on the ground in these early states, and particularly in Iowa. We did third at the Ames, Iowa straw poll. We've languished since that period of time. We're trying some other tactics tomorrow. We'll be joining Joe Biden, and we'll be working together, as we have already in the Senate, on a federalism approach. It's not breaking up Iraq, Tom, as you had mentioned earlier, and this has actually been endorsed by President Talabani of Iraq.
The Kurds, really, of course. They want to break up. The Kurds do.
No, they know they can't break up, because if they do, the Turks will be right in on them. They like this federalism approach where you devolve a lot of your power and authority to the regions. And I think you're clearly going to see this take place in the Sunni West, and I believe it'll ultimately happen as well in the Shia South. And it's the federalism is a way to keep the place together and to keep it from going to a civil war and breaking apart. But Joe and I agree on that, and we're going to try to work together and both of us get some wind in our sails through really taking on a tough, important topic of the day.
Sam Brownback, we're going to look at the issues with you, with your vision for the country. But I want you to speak very candidly with us first, your sort of narrative of this race and how it is, why it is, that you are where you are in the polls, which I'm looking at one here from Iowa recently, way back, I mean, way behind Rudy Giuliani, McCain, Fred Thompson, you know, down in the 2% range, very small dollars coming in the third quarter. We don't want to just talk about horse race here, but we do want to understand how you understand what's gone on here with your candidacy and why it doesn't have more wind in its sails. I mean, you know, you've got an enormous. I'm reading David Yepsen here in the Des Moines Register talking about Iowa Republican likely caucus goers. 51% describe themselves as born again fundamentalist Christians. That would seem to be right in your wheelhouse. Why haven't you caught more fire there, Sam?
Well, I think a couple of issues have hurt me. Number one, we did third in the Ames, Iowa straw poll. But number two is Mike Huckabee. We were trying to get the bounce out of that, and he got it.
Former Baptist preacher out of Arkansas, governor there.
Yes. Yep. Mm-hmm. That was one of the key things that has happened since that period of time, because we were running pretty much neck and neck. A second one has been the immigration issue. I've supported comprehensive immigration reform. I was part of the group that put the bill together last year that made it through the Senate. I support comprehensive immigration reform even now. I think we ought to do a guest worker program and enforce the borders. I am strong for enforcing the borders. But that immigration issue has hurt me significantly. I think it's something we've got to work out, and it
I want to be
hurt
sure
me
I understand,
with the base
Senator,
of voters.
I'm sorry, Senator. I want to be sure I understand. You're too open on immigration or too closed? From what angle has it hurt you?
Too open. I've chaired the immigration subcommittee in the mm-hmm. past. I've been on the Judiciary Committee for some period of time. I think we really need to work to solve this problem, and that no solution is not a solution. I do think we've got to enforce the borders, as I've mm-hmm. said many, many mm-hmm. times. I've supported building the fence, but I also support a guest worker program. I think somewhere down the road we need to do that, and it's that stance I think has really hurt me probably as much as any single issue has been the immigration topic.
But I want to ask you, it was just, a week or two ago in Salt Lake City, 50 religious right or pro-family leaders, as they describe themselves, meeting there, talking about who's in the race and who's not and what they need, and expressing enormous dissatisfaction with the Republican field. James Dobson, head of the Focus on the Family, big voice here, saying, we just can't stand up for the leading candidates in this party. People are even thinking about breaking away, forming a third party. And there you stand. I mean, righteous by any measure, by their own measure,
I should
say. Well, is it galling to you? Is it confusing to you? How do you explain it? Why aren't you held up on their wings?
I don't know, Tom. I wish I knew. Why isn't Mike Huckabee being held up by them? I don't know.
Is it because you're Catholic? Is Catholic not good enough for the evangelical movement? Does it have to be Protestant?
Then why not Mike Huckabee? He's a Baptist Baptist minister, so that would qualify. I think for both of us, a big function of it has been the lack of being able to raise money. Neither of us have raised much in the way of money, and I think a number of the organizations on the social conservative side are looking at saying, hey, love these guys, but there's just no money in the bank to be able to run.
Social conservatives have money. Why aren't they putting it in in the hat you're passing?
I'm asking. I wish they were. I can't answer it for you, Tom. We really thought that we'd be able to get a lot of the social conservatives on board and then build out to economic conservatives.
Right.
Because I've got a very strong pro-growth agenda. And I think mm-hmm. those are the two wings of the Republican Party that have really carried us since Ronald Reagan. It's pro-growth and it's social conservatism together. Those two have to fly together.
Maybe they're not holding hands anymore. Or does it mean that the religious right is kind of edging off the stage here? That whatever the leaders meeting in Salt Lake City say, that somehow, Americans of that political stripe just aren't as engaged. What Karl Rove liked to call the base of the Republican Party, are they just moving out of politics, Sam Brumba?
Oh, I don't think they're moving out of politics. I think they're saying politics is not where I'm going to be saved, and politics isn't going to save us. That it's important that you're standing up for life and marriage and faith in the public square. Those are very important. But at the end of the day, it's more their faith. It's their family. I think they're frustrated about the lack of progress that they've seen after all these years of activism. They don't see as much progress as they believe should be taking place in the country. I think those factors enter into it.
So do you still bang on that door, or are you looking elsewhere now?
Well, I think we continue to ask, but we are looking elsewhere. That's why Joe Biden and I, who mm-hmm. Joe and I don't agree on much of anything. I love Joe. He's a great guy. Mm-hmm. But we disagree on many topics, but on Iraq and a political solution, because we have not been able to come together on a country on a military solution. But the military is making some progress, I believe, in Iraq. But politically, we've made precious little. And so we're coming together on this political piece, and we're going to be talking and visiting about that. I was at the minority forum that we had and talked about the need for an apology for slavery and segregation. Mm-hmm. I'm carrying the bill in the Senate on an official apology to Native Americans for U.S. federal policy. And that's just what we're apologizing about, is U.S. federal policy mm-hmm. Towards the Native Americans. And moving that forward with African Americans. Plus, I think we need to really have the pro-life agenda be a whole life agenda. That it stands for the child in the womb, but it also stands for the child in Darfur, somebody that's in prison, and see that every life is precious at every stage and in every place. And so I'm going to push that as well.
And with all that, are you reaching out then for a liberal vote in addition to your conservative Christian vote or something else?
Reaching out for a foreign policy vote. Reaching out for an independent voter that's looking for somebody that's consistent philosophically. That resonates with them, looking for that person that is seeking out of their government a government that can work. And I think that's one of the great frustrations in the public right now is that the government just can't seem to get together enough to work for people. And I'm reaching out for that. I'm pushing, along with Dianne Feinstein, a war on cancer. We're getting ready for a tsunami of cancer as the boomers age and get into their key cancer years. We ought to be taking that thing on front and center as aggressively as we possibly can right now.
Mm. Sam Brownback joins us today from Kansas City. He's in the race for the GOP presidential nomination. It's been some hard slogging, but you can hear he's still hanging in there. Says if he makes the top four in Iowa, he'll hang in. If he doesn't, he's out. You can join the conversation today. Senator, please stand by. You've got questions for our listeners. Is Sam your man? Have you met him on the campaign trail? And why hasn't this high-profile Christian conservative leader got more traction in a party that's supposed to have the Christian right as its base? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. We'll be right back with Sam Brownback. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with GOP presidential candidate, an outspoken Christian conservative, Senator Sam Brownback, about his uphill fight for the GOP nomination and what it tells us about where the Republican Party is headed. You can join the conversation. Are you drawn to Sam Brownback's upfront religious conservatism? We're put off by it. You hear the nuance that he's giving us today as he reaches out to voters in Iowa and beyond. We're at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Here's just an interesting clip before we dive back in. Big pro-life conservative evangelical meeting in Salt Lake City a couple weeks ago. They talked about the possibility of supporting a third-party candidate if the Republican nominee is not pro-life. Been getting a lot of press Tuesday this week on the Sean Hannity Show. Focus on the Family President, Dr. James Dobson, who attended that meeting, talked about why he's still looking for a new candidate.
I've worked 35 years to defend the unborn child and the institution of marriage and traditional morality in the culture. And if I now help to put a man or a woman in the White House who opposes those basic values, what do I have left? I don't even know who I am.
What do I have left, says Jim Dobson. Hey, Jim, what about Sam, we ask? We're at 800-423-8255. Senator Sam Brownback, a lot of people will know you very well, and others not as well. I wish you'd just give us the big strokes of your biography. Where are you from? Who are you?
Well, I was raised on a farm south of Kansas City, about 50 miles. My parents still farm there. Thought I was going to be a farmer. Hmm. I got a scholarship and went to K-State undergrad in agriculture. Again, thought I was going to go back to the farm. Decided to go on to law school at the University of Kansas, met my wife there, and then we went back to Manhattan, Kansas, practiced law for a while, started a family. My wife's a lawyer as well. She was working in a trust department. Then I was selected as agriculture secretary in the state of Kansas. Came in the Revolution, ran for Congress in 1994, went to the Senate in 1996. My wife and I, she is an absolute wonderful lady. We have five children. They range in age from 21 to a couple of nine-year-olds, and I'm the most blessed man I know.
Now, Bob Dole did not lay hands on you, and yet you won anyway in Kansas, going after his seat when he left the Senate. How'd you do that?
I ran as a conservative. They appointed the current lieutenant governor to fill his seat, and she had voted and would supported tax increases, was pro-choice. I ran as a conservative and was able to win that primary and then go on to win that general election in 1996 and been reelected twice since.
Leadership all along the way, in law school, in college, you know, a student body president and all that. Your wife, at least I read here, Sam, heir to a newspaper fortune. Is that right? Are you a rich family?
I wouldn't call us rich. Her family had the Topeka newspaper and several others around. They have been bought out. But I wouldn't call us particularly rich. We do have some resources, and we've been blessed with those.
I'd like to understand your spiritual journey. You're very upfront about it. You've written about it in your memoir. But describe to us how and why you went from Methodist to, I guess, Protestant evangelical to Catholicism, all, as I read it, more or less in the space of a decade or so.
For a longer period of time than that, I went Methodist because growing up in Parker, Kansas, 250 people, that was the only church we had in town.
It's just what it was, yeah.
Yeah, we were one church down, and mm-hmm. And that's where I found the Lord, was there, had a great youth group leader, got involved more in the evangelical church going to college, and really enjoyed and grew there. I think the faith journey is just the key journey of our lives. And it's one I think we ought to ask the most questions about ourselves. Just, you know, do we believe in God? And if so, seek to find him. That's been a big part of what my journey has been. I went through a melanoma episode mm-hmm. that really was a very crushing experience. It's very simple for me. I mean, they mm-hmm. got it early, and, mm-hmm. and we didn't have to do any chemo or radiation. But mm-hmm. it was a very profound experience for me mentally to look at the end of life, which is what a lot of times cancer causes you to do, and say, am I pleased with how life's going? And I wasn't. And that really sunk my faith in deeper, and it made it much more lively part of my life.
You were in the Senate and in Washington when you converted to Roman Catholicism. That's an interesting step to take. I read here you were baptized into the Catholic Church, not in a chapel run by Opus Dei in Washington, D.C. Why that move? Why then? What took you to Catholicism?
Well, I just felt a deep calling to do it. I felt a deep calling to do it, and I was not inclined to go to join the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. I spent 3 or 4 years reading about it, studying books. I wasn't familiar at the time what the Opus Dei movement was. It was a priest that I'd worked with, seemed fine to me. I am not a member of Opus Dei. Mm-hmm. I get asked that question. But I spent a fair amount of time really thinking and studying and deciding that it was the right route. My family did not join with me. Mm-hmm. So on Sunday mornings, I go to Mass and then join my family at an evangelical church. And I feel like I got the best of all worlds on a Sunday morning.
You know, it's just such an interesting step that I wish, if you can, that you'd share a little more of the why with us. What was it about where you were in the evangelical church or the attraction of Roman Catholicism that took you to that interesting step at a really eyes wide open, fully adult stage in life?
I don't talk a whole lot about it simply because it just engenders more questions. But I have no problem whatsoever with the evangelical church. I think it's a fabulous church, and it's reaching out and activating people in their faiths. I just found it for myself and for the calling that I felt and the reading that I had done, that it was the right move for me to make, and I've been very happy to be in the Catholic Church. I just find this faith journey in life a critically important one, to always be open and listening and seeking, honestly seeking. And that's what I try to do, and that's also what I try to live. And I get the faith wrong a lot. I don't live it the way I'd like to, but the faith lived fully is a beautiful faith. It's a faith full of love, and it's a faith full of caring, and it's a faith full of being motivated to do good things. And I just find it a beautiful thing, properly lived. And most of us have difficulty with that piece of it, properly living it.
Well, you've been consistent on that front. There's no doubt about it. When you and I first talked, it was back in 2004 at the Republican National Convention at Madison Square Garden. You talked with us in New York about a culture of life and about a culture war, you said, that needs to be won. I asked you to explain what you meant by a culture war. And here's what you said, Senator Brown, back in 2004, Madison Square Garden.
It's a broader issue than just when people hear culture of life, it's, okay, that's shorthand for abortion or pro-life. But when I got to speak Tuesday night, what I talked about, a culture of life is to celebrate every life, every place, at every stage. So that's why we fight so hard for Sudan and Sudanese refugees, or what's happening in North Korea, or for a person that's been trafficked, human trafficked. And it also applies to the child in the womb and the mother carrying that child. So I want that agenda to be seen as what it is, a very broad, encompassing, and uplifting agenda.
Sam Brownback, Senator, with us at the Republican National Convention in 2004. He's with us right now. And, Senator, a lot of people want to speak with you. Let's turn to Aroa in Cedar Rapids.
Tom, thank you for playing that clip, because It's what I've been trying to do and talk about. And since then, we've been able to get some refugees out of North Korea and into the United States and into South Korea. We're about to get a prison recidivism bill through the United States Senate and House to reduce recidivism rates for prisoners. I mean, things are happening on this pro-life, whole-life agenda, and it's where I think we can link together with people across the political spectrum on a whole host of issues if we'll just kind of look up and be willing to look past our judgmental or party divides to actually do some of these important things.
Maybe. There's a lot of judgment in your sack of policies as well. We'll look at some of that, Senator. But if I may, let's turn to a few callers here. First, from Cedar Rapids, Iowa, Aroa is on the line. Hi, Aroa. You're on the air with Senator Sam Brownback.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
I had a comment and a question. Mm-hmm. Senator Brownback has quite a following between a lot of my evangelical peers, especially young evangelical peers in our 20s, young families. But I noticed my involvement started with the Republican Party at age 18, kind of doing grassroots, and I was always struck about the sort of lesser of two evils mentality that a lot of Republicans and a lot of evangelicals have.
What do you mean, Aurora? What do you mean by
that? In terms of endorsing a small, it seems like maybe a small-time candidate that didn't have a chance of winning, in a very candid sense, or endorsing a larger Republican candidate that might not have some of the main conservative and religious values that an evangelical is looking for.
Do you think that's what evangelicals are doing now? Is that what the polls mean this time or not?
Oh, I think they're terrified that if they don't endorse someone like Mitt Romney or Rudy Giuliani, they'll lose to the Democrats, and their voice won't be heard at all. But at the same time, there's a mounting frustration that poster child issues like abortion or gay rights get thrown up and then nothing really done about them.
So what's your question, Aroa?
My question, and I could actually take this off the air, is if Senator Brownback, being involved in politics, thinks there's a place for that grassroots, for a grassroots candidate to win without a huge endorsement that comes from Focus on the Family or comes from big money, like, you know, we see the Democrats or Mitt Romney or Rudy Giuliani play. Because I think that's a huge concern for a lot of evangelicals, that if we throw our weight behind this guy, we're going to lose to the Democrats. But we don't really want to sign on with someone who has watered down political policy.
Aroa, thanks very much. Senator Brownback, your Iowa follower there puts her finger right on the dilemma that a lot of Republicans are feeling. What do you say to it?
She really does. I had a key political activist, been a longtime grassroots activist, the other night was saying to me about the support for Rudy Giuliani. And he says, you know, I was saying, well, I think maybe it's this or that. And he says, I don't think it's that complicated. I think it's two things, 9/11 and Hillary. His leadership on 9/11, and that he's seen as somebody that can beat Hillary. And that's the depth of support for Mayor Giuliani. Aurora asks, she puts her finger exactly on it. I do think you can win with a grassroots candidacy because of how the structure is set up. It goes not nationwide initially, not even through huge states initially. It goes through Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina. And I think the Internet can help people to organize and to communicate on a very cheap basis.
But she doesn't want to throw away her vote. You hear her fear, her notion is that, you know, she may give it to you and see a Democrat in the White House. Many may celebrate at that. Aroa wouldn't. And so she's worried about giving it to you, even from the grassroots.
Have faith. Have faith. Yeah, we can do this. I don't think there's a I don't think you win when you give up on your principles. And I think people see that very clearly. And I think they have less regard for people that give up on their principles rather than those that stand and fight for them. And I think they're more attracted to a guy like me or a guy like Paul Wellstone, who was on the opposite end of the political spectrum and yet would win in a different state in Minnesota. But a lot of people there would support him just because the guy stood up and fought. And he fought for what he believed in. And that tended to really rally people, and I think people could rally and should rally to my candidacy.
You may be right, but you're 2% in that Iowa poll. Aroa, thanks for your call. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Let's take a call from Granby, Connecticut. Maggie, you're on the air.
Hi. Good morning, Tom.
Hi.
Good morning, Maggie.
Hi. I'm a Democrat, and the thought of voting for a Republican, considering what has been going on the last 7 years, is frightening to me, quite frankly. But I think I'm a member of a growing group of Democrats who are on the fence about abortion and the role that religion should play in politics, which I think most Democrats feel shouldn't be that much. But my question to Sam is, if you do become president, number one, how do you see your faith working in your administration and in your decision making? And number two, our country is so demoralized right now. We are, I have never felt such a sadness and a disillusionment amongst my party members and amongst just people in general. I wish a candidate would reflect on that and speak about that. And I think that there's something there with Sam, that he has what it takes to be able to communicate and to encourage and inspire.
Maggie, we'll put that to him, and we'll do it right now. But let me just ask you first, you know, you hear that kind of gentleness and compassion in Sam Brownback, but as a Democrat, you know where he stands on abortion, on stem cell research, on prayer in school, you know, on, I mean, faith-based government, right on down the list. You'd still be open in spite of those positions? Dear Maggie?
Yes, I'm thinking.
hold the thought then.
Hey, Tom.
Okay, hold the thought then. Sam Brownback, there may be an opening. But what do you say to it?
Well, I say, yeah, God bless you and thank you, Maggie, for even thinking about this. Because for so long, we've just, everybody's closed their minds and said, I'm over here and you're over there, and that's just the way it is. And so maybe actually, Tom, you know, you're talking about the values voters kind of slipping off the agenda. Maybe the rest of the country is kind of moving to say, well, maybe these guys aren't so off or crazy, or maybe we can actually talk to each other. And I think her second point is the big one, actually, in this election cycle, the demoralization of America. Here is the greatest nation in the history of mankind where we sit today. You know, less than 5% of the world's population, 20% of the economy, a third of the world's military spending, 40% of the research and development budget. And, you know, we're people are feeling down. You know, and so you're going, why is that? And I hope tomorrow Joe Biden and I can start a discussion between the political parties about a political solution in Iraq, and start to show that we can actually work together to solve some problems. And what I would do, Maggie, is instead of picking the 25% or 30% of the issues that divide us, let's pick some of the 70% that unite us. Like I mentioned earlier, a war on cancer. The country would cheer if we declared war on cancer and actually started making progress and showed people their government could work for them on a topic they care about. And I think that's a very pro-life agenda. I think this is key for us in the next president to pick topics that we can unite, because a bunch of them we can't on, but there are a bunch that we can. And I've shown it in working with people like Paul Wellstone, Joe Biden. We can do it.
Maggie, we'll come back and test the case. Thank you very much for your call. Senator Sam Brownback, please stand by. Listeners, you can join us, 800-423-8255. 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking with GOP presidential candidate Senator Sam Brownback about his uphill fight for the GOP nomination and what it tells us about where the Republican Party is headed. You can join the conversation. What do you think? Do the media pigeonhole and ignore perceived second-tier candidates? What do we lose when we do that? What's your question for Sam Brownback? Are you with him on Darfur intervention, on a three-state solution or the region solution for Iraq, on the flat tax? Are you with him on abortion? And why are Giuliani and Romney, one pro-choice and one come-lately-to-the-pro-life camp, at the front of the GOP race? We're at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Sam, we have a lot of callers who want to talk to you, Senator, but there's a couple things I just have to ask you off of Maggie's question earlier. You know, the Democrat in Connecticut saying, boy, you sound good.
Isn't that interesting?
It is interesting.
She's very open.
But I'm not sure that she completely gets where you're coming from. I mean, for a lot of Democrats...
I think she does.
Well, I think she is at a fundamental thematic level. But then here you are, you know, you've been described as somebody who wants to bring a kind of a soft theocracy to this country. Did you not propose doing away with the Department of Education, energy, commerce, government?
There's a big difference between that and a soft theocracy. Tom, Western civilization tried a theocracy several hundred years ago, and it was very bad for the church, and it was very bad for government. I mean, this is a bad idea. It doesn't work. It's bad for the faith, and it's bad for government. I'm opposed to that. But I don't think you drive faith out of the public square. I don't think that's the meaning of the separation of church and state. What it is that the state doesn't establish a church, but it doesn't block it as the second part of that amendment either. And I think you need to engage faith. And if we would, frankly and carefully talk about that, I think we could really find our way through a lot of these problems instead of just kind of calling somebody a theocrat and saying, let's move on.
Let's hear from our listeners. Brian's calling from St. Albans, Vermont. Brian, you're on the air with Sam Brownback.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
Pretty well. What do you know?
Hey, Brian.
I'd just like to make a quick comment, if I could. Mm-hmm. The senator touched upon something why he thinks he's not getting the support that he would like to be getting from the conservatives, and that was the issue of immigration.
Right.
You said that you are supporting
guest worker program.
Guest worker. Mm-hmm. Guest worker
right, the
program.
Guest worker programs, that's it.
Right.
To myself, that is probably one of the main issues in this campaign is immigration. And the Senate just tried to pass this guest worker program and what they call comprehensive immigration reform, and it didn't pass. I'm very thankful that it didn't, because quite frankly, it was nothing but an amnesty, and people that are supporting what they call comprehensive immigration reform are doing nothing but rewarding criminals for breaking our law.
So where's your vote headed, Brian?
Right now I'm looking at Tom Tancredo. I really don't know if he's got the money to make it happen, but
he's the one-issue guy on immigration, and we hear that. Sam Brownback, how about it? What do you say to Brian?
Well, I ended up voting against this bill this year. I supported the one from the last year after they sunsetted the guest worker provision. The Democrats took that and sunsetted it. I didn't think it was a complete bill. I do think there was a lot of flaws in this bill. I think there was some good things on the comprehensive. But I think clearly as well now the country has spoken. They want to see enforcement. We're doing enforcement. The Bush administration is going to do enforcement, and they are doing that. I still think at some point down the road, what we really should do is a very simple guest worker program, not throw a bunch of bells and whistles, not have amnesty, but just say, if you want to come here and work, here is a simple procedure to be able to do that. It's got to be trackable. It has to be enforceable. And it can't be any sort of amnesty or any special favor one way or the other for people that came here illegally in the first place.
Brian, thanks very much for your call. Let's get one from Sumter, South Carolina. Harry, you're on the line with on the air with Sam Brownback.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Harry.
My comment question is, it seems to me that most Republicans who term themselves pro-growth are actually favoring policies, especially tax policies, that widen the gap between the rich and the poor. Renaming the estate tax the death tax and calling it double taxation, when in fact most of the money that's taxed in large estates is money that has never been taxed. It's largely capital gain.
So what are you saying, Harry? Where are you going with that?
Well, I'm saying that the policies that the senator is favoring is basically widening the gap between the rich and the middle class, and their tax policies that favor largely the high-income people.
Harry, we got it. Sam Brownback, how about it? Do you, whether you intend to or not, end up supporting the rich? And more than that, you're very down on taxes, but we're laying debt all over our kids and grandkids and great-grandkids with this Iraq war. Is that moral?
I don't know if I could put it in a moral framework, but I sure don't like it, and I disagree with it.
But you don't want to pay for it now. You don't want more taxes to pay for it, as far as I can tell.
That's not the route to pay for it. Yeah, the last report that came out
last week. What do you pay for it with? Monopoly money? I mean,
you pay for it with growth. Growth is 70% to 80% of balancing your budget.
We've had great growth over these last years, and still we're not paying for the Iraq war. It hasn't paid for it, Senator. It has not.
Tom, you see the way the figures came out this week? $161 billion is the deficit. It's down from $90 billion from last year. It's projected to get into balance by 2010.
We're headed for trillions with this war. Why not pay for it? Why not? Why make our kids pay for it? We haven't done this in wars in the past. We've stepped up and carried the burden while we made the war. Why not this time?
Because the route to balancing the budget is growing the economy.
We've grown before.
70% to 80%, and look at where we are. We're getting close to balancing it, and we should be able to balance it under current projections if we don't increase spending by 2010.
Are you really telling us you think you believe we're paying for this war?
Yes. Look at the numbers, Tom. Look at the numbers that came out this week. Did you see those?
Yes, I did. But I'm also looking at that.
Aren't you impressed?
Well, it's great. I'm all for that. But I'm looking at the ticker that's going on this war, and I don't see where it's balancing out. Include the war in the budget. Dump it in there. And are we paying for it? I think not. And I wonder how you justify that.
$161 billion is the deficit this year. It was $254 billion, I believe, was the number last year. It was well up over $400 billion when we got going into this with a soft economy. The key to growth, the key to balancing the budget is the economy. That's why I propose things like an optional flat tax, which will create growth, create job opportunities in South Carolina, in Kansas. Growth is the key to this. It's not about raising taxes. It's about creating growth. And also things like personal Social Security accounts so that my kids and the generation paying in now can have something that's theirs rather than being taken by the government. And we really got to restrain federal spending here. And here's what I've got to put forward a different proposal on this, to take that military base closing process, the BRAC Commission, and apply it to the rest of government so we can have this annual or every other year culling process of federal programs, including military programs, including entitlements. We've got to change the system because the system's built to spend.
Let's go to Steve in Fitchburg, Massachusetts. Steve, you're on the air with Sam Brownback.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
All right. What do you think?
I have a question.
Steve?
I am a secular humanist, a non-theistic secular humanist, and needless to say, the religious right concerns me very much. I'm wondering if the senator agrees with many on the religious right that non-theistic humanists, secular humanists, by definition, are immoral and not good Americans.
Senator?
No. I think you have values just like everybody else has values. I think you wouldn't probably like this term, but I believe you're a beautiful child of a loving God.
But Steve doesn't think so. Can he still be a moral American in your view?
Yes.
Can he still be a good American in your view?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And I want him in this country. I mean, look at how much of what I would look at as calling natural law, but look at how much of that was found by Native Americans in this country. of how the total works together. I mean, I believe that people can know and do know right from wrong, that it's innate within us, and that if people search for that, they can find that, and they do find that.
As a political ally, would you give Steve, the secular humanist, the same standing as a evangelical Christian ally?
Absolutely. He's a citizen of the United States. I am not a theocrat. He has an equal vote. He has an incredible, immense worth as an individual that's unmeasurable because it's so large.
Steve, do you buy it? Do you believe
it? Individual.
Steve?
I appreciate the words. What concerns me is the public policy that seems to be pushed forward by the religious right. So much of it really does discriminate in a way, in one way or another, against non-theistic Americans, people who just don't believe in any kind of supreme being. From simple issues such as Under God and the Pledge, for example, and even issues that might hit home more, faith-based initiatives, funding of, basically funding of churches through tax dollars.
Steve, we've got it. Let me get one more call from a Steve in New Hampshire, Windham, New Hampshire. New Hampshire, Steve, you're on the air.
I appreciate the conversation today. The thing that I find the most nauseating about the religious right's position is that in their goal to inject religious parts into the political system, is that there's an underlying hypocrisy that nobody speaks about.
What is it?
Well, the only reason that they're willing and bullish on putting religion into politics is because right now there is a Christian majority in the country. Would they be nearly as compelled if, for example, were a Muslim majority? Would the senator support praying five times a day in school as long as you faced Mecca? I think I find an underlying hypocrisy that nobody addresses.
Senator Brownback?
You know, I loved Mother Teresa's saying, and she was a lady that spent most of her time working in a country that was very faith-oriented, but not her faith. And she said, I love all faiths. I think she actually put this, I love all religions. I'm in love with my own. And that's what I try to live. I am sure.
Would you be for school prayer if it were five times a day to Mecca?
Let me finish this, if I could, for
yes,
Steve. I'm sure, Steve, that you can look in things I've said or done and find hypocrisy. I'm a flawed, failed man. I admit it. But I don't think that should keep us from trying to pursue the better and to pursue those sort of things that by natural law, by us finding it from different ways, but we find the same thing, that we could stand for the beauty and the sacredness of every individual.
Steve, thanks for your call. Let's get another from Iowa City. David, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question, Senator, is about the war in Iraq. If you were to become president, how would your faith affect policymaking about the war?
It's a good question, David, and I don't I'm not sure how to answer it. My faith does inform a lot of who I am. You can see policy positions I've taken in the 4,500 votes I've cast in either the House or the Senate.
In the debate this week, you praised U.S. military performance in Iraq. Is that related to your faith?
I certainly recognize their courage and valor and their sacrifice of self. Sacrifice of self is something I would certainly be a part of my faith background. I view every life as sacred, and that includes Iraqis, that their lives are sacred too. So I don't like this when we see the sectarian strife taking place. That's something I hope Joe and I are talking. What we hope to see taking place is a lot of that being reduced and those lives being saved.
And maybe a three-state kind of federal solution there. Let's get another call from Beverly, Massachusetts. Anna, you're on the air with Senator Brownback.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning,
I'm
Anna.
Calling Hi. I have a more religion-friendly question for you, which is...
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
Praise the Lord.
I'm an evangelical. I'm actually Anglican, but evangelical. My experience with the Catholic Church has been particularly influenced by the positions, I'd say the comprehensive life positions, particularly in regard to not just emphasizing being against abortion, but also anti-death penalty and anti-war, particularly the fact that Pope Benedict and Pope John Paul have both opposed the Iraq war. And my question is, what is your perspective, Sam, on that Catholic position, traditionally being anti-death penalty, but also often being anti-war in a party that tends to support the death penalty and tends to, right now, obviously support the current war.
And we'll hear that. Where's your vote leaning now, Anna?
Well, my vote is actually leaning toward
Barack Obama.
Come on.
But can I say, part of why my vote is leaning that way is I agree with actually the caller, Maggie, who said there's increasingly a Democratic position that is starting to speak about faith and being against abortion, but comprehensively pro-life. And I am part of that position, and I find that while I wish there was a stronger stand by Obama, I do feel like he is more open to talk about faith and open to people like me in the party who are.
Anna, we've got it. Our time is short. Senator Brownback, comprehensive pro-life. Anna wonders if you would include that to proscribe, to rule out the death penalty, to rule out war.
Well, I oppose the death penalty other than in cases of where we cannot protect the society from the individual. So it's a very, very, very limited use of death penalty. When we catch Osama bin Laden, I don't think we can protect the society. But otherwise, I think we need to try to talk and teach and live a culture of life. I believe in a culture of life, and I think that also applies to the state. I understand a number of people view this differently, and that there's a difference between innocent human life and somebody that's committed a heinous crime. And I respect that position, but I find in really talking about a culture of life, I think we need to be consistent. On the war issue, I voted for the war. It's a matter of prudential judgment, I believe. I believe it was the right thing given the information and knowledge we had at the day. And finally, let me say both of Anna and Maggie, if I could. I'm delighted to hear of Democrat-leaning individuals more open to issues of faith and to looking at life more holistically.
Senator Brownback, we're out of time with that. We thank you very much for being with us. Thanks for being here.
Tom, you bet.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.